Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 50 of Confessions of a Market Maker. I'm your co-host, Ray, a.k.a. All Day Ray, a.k.a. Paulie Walnuts. And I'm joined here by my eclectic co-host, former market maker of 20 years and current day retail trader, a man who was never concerned with the outcome. He's only been concerned with his income. A man who has sold more paper than Xerox. I'm talking about the proper villain, JJ.
Hey, how's it going? Good, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing real good, man. And, you know, today is a special occasion as we have two distinguished guests. The first man I'll introduce is making his second appearance on this podcast, a man with 20 years experience of institutional equity and prop trading, turned Vietnam angel investor, now nonprofit founder, CEO, and social entrepreneur. A man from the place that birthed the magnificent art form that we call hip hop. I'm talking about my man, Troy Prince. Troy, thanks for joining us again.
Hey, man. What's up, Ray, JJ? Thanks for having me. Howard.
And yes, and today, our next guest is a man with an innumerable amount of accolades to his name. A man with more than 20 years experience in the financial community, acting as both entrepreneurial and investing capacity. The co-founder and chairman of StockTwits, the founder and managing partner of Social Leverage, an early stage seed investment fund, and the host of Panic with Friends podcast. I'm talking about Howard Linsden. Howard, how's it going?
And two kids and one dog. Two kids, one wife, one dog.
Kids and one dog. You know, Howard, I try to open the podcast with some energy, maybe some like witty anecdotes, but you know, after I've been listening to your podcast, it's not going to match up to the Barack Obama intro you have. I assumed you're a guy who has many connections, but a former president. I mean, that's pretty awesome. How'd that come about?
Well, I got Trump too, but he just rips me apart. He hates me, this Trump. Obama is my buddy Canute, who runs the show, and I just we went to a great comedian, local guy here in town, a DJ, and he just does some great voices. So we wrote that up for him to do in his Obama voice, and we're not popular enough that Obama's noticed.
Oh, okay.
And at least it's good enough that people recognize. I go, what the fuck? People double take me, and they'll send me a note. I go, was that Obama?
Yeah.
Oh no! I'll always go, no, that wasn't Obama. Why would Obama say this for me? So it's really, really, you caught on there. But yeah, a lot of people don't. If you only listen to it once, you may just go, what? And then if you listen to it regularly, eventually everybody calls me and goes, was that fucking Obama?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I did, Howard. I had to like double take. I was like, wait, no way. Like, I'm gonna have to rewind this. But no, I love it, man. It's awesome.
The Trump one's really funny because I'm just so sick of that voice and that face and everything about it. It's, even though it's funny and he just attacks me in the whole intro, like it's not funny to me anymore. The guy's such a fucking headache in my life, just the yelling that's gone on the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And the hardship for people. So yeah, we go with Obama. It's about a couple laughs and it's about teaching people. My whole mantra has been, I'm lucky. I keep trying to like stay one second ahead of the masses. You don't have to be that far ahead of people. Yeah. And so if I could do this, it's like Larry David or Dave Letterman. If I can do this nonsense, anybody can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I can do this, anybody can do this. And that's kind of been I'm just trying to give this stuff away and tell people, you know, that find the right mentors and read the right few books and listen to the right few podcasts now, forgetting it. With like podcasts has taken it to a new level in terms of mentoring and education. And you too can have a lifetime investing. You go play pro sports. I was just talking to Ryan Neese, who played for, you know, played for 0-16 Detroit Lions, and in his rookie season won Super Bowl Tampa Bay, and, you know, runs Next Play Capital. And his dad was Ronnie Lott, so the only father-son to ever win Super Bowls. That's a small fact. And the thing is, like, everybody wants to invest, right? It's something you can do from, like, 8 to 80, man. Like,
yeah,
it's not like football where you got to train your whole life and then it's over and you got to find your, you know, investing is the one thing we should be teaching people to do. That's the one reason America is great, is that we have all this capital. and all this, like, all this margins in knowledge, right? Like, you know, we talk about technology. Well, they have a great business. China's great at what they do, but they have low margins. US has all the high margins. And the way to take margins to the next level is teach people how to invest, because that's where the margins are, is in returns. And so we're doing things so wrong in this country, and I'm forgetting like all the great things, but I'm talking about in investing. And we're now in this revolution where Robinhood and StockTwits and Twitter and Telegram, and a lot of companies that weren't even intended to be for finance are now being used for finance, whether it's Discord or Slack. And so FinTwit is everywhere. And the whole name of StockTwits was like a play on the word twit, like who's the idiot? And, you know, the retail knows just as much as the institution. And we've got to teach people this language. You know, for 30 years, we taught people how to learn. You got to learn Spanish to compete. You got to learn Chinese to compete. What we should have been teaching people is, you know, how to manage money, we're going to be printing this money for decades, teach people how to invest it properly. So we're behind. We're way behind. And now we're playing catch up. And these kids didn't wait. You know, COVID happened and Robinhood happened and StockTwits happened and podcasts happened and Spotify happened. And now people are using this thing for what it should be used, laughs and money.
Yeah.
And money is the language.
Absolutely. Certainly can't be a coincidence that also within this same era, we have commissions going to zero, fractional share ownership. And so there's literally no excuse anymore. Like, it's not a coincidence. Sorry to jump in, Howard.
No, you said it. Like, there is no, the kids are going to do it. So let's give them some good advice. They're going to do stupid things. You give a kid a gun, give a kid free trading, give a kid a vape pen. They're going to give a kid Tinder. They're going to use these things in ways that no one ever thought they're going to use it, right? And
exactly.
And same with hip hop and music. Just what starts with a beat, you know, turns into a thing. And stocks is the ultimate thing. It's not, stocks and investing are the ultimate equalizer, right?
Done.
Everybody has inside information. You know, I was saying today that 150 years ago, the ticker tape was created by some guy. I forget. I talked about it. Just think about just from the inside information that one ticker tape helped, like JP Morgan could read that and then say whatever he wanted to the rest of the people.
Exactly.
That was like God. Yeah. And today the tape is everywhere, coming at you from every angle, and DMs and Telegrams and Snapchats. And like, there is no ticker tape. I mean, there's price, but that's fucking it. And so no one has an excuse. So in an area where the ticker tape is like, we're a ticker tape in many ways. We're taking information in and digesting it and resharing it. So, you know, the stock market is this giant mem machine anchored to price. And if people learn the mem, and kids are pretty fucking good at memes or memes or whatever you call them. I don't even know how to pronounce it. You give a kid a fucking Instagram and they come up with memes. So you give a kid Robin Hood and free trading and like, fucking look out. Like, the next Warren Buffett is going to be like 100 times better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, the younger generation also, you know, grew up with video games and gaming, and then the stock markets, essentially, it's, you know, it's a puzzle. We're trying to, you know, we're all trying to figure this out. And I think for myself, Howard, what you mentioned with Ronnie Lott's son, and I think for ex-athletes, I never took it to that type of level, but I was an athlete growing up, and it's you still get that competitive factor. You get to compete, and that's a real, you know, big aspect that I enjoy. So today we have you guys on to, you know, one, help raise awareness for the StockTwits First Charity Poker Tournament, which is raising money for Troy's nonprofit, Wall Street Bound. Of course, you know, I want to talk some trading as well. So just a quick reminder to the listeners, if you guys want to learn market option theory, market profile, trade futures, trade equities, join JJ and I at our lovely trading community at microefutures.com. I just want to start it off asking both of you guys about just your general thoughts around the resiliency that we've seen from the market this year.
Howard, you want to take a stab or?
Oh, you go first.
I'll say this, man. You know, we've heard for decades now, don't fight the Fed, helicopter Ben. And, you know, It's hard, man, because at some point, you know, I was trading NASDAQ during the bubble, exactly during the bubble. And I remember, you know, all of a sudden, you know, PEs fell out of vogue and it wasn't about valuations anymore. It was more about the clicks and the And so at what point, you know, if there's no limited visibility on earnings, you know, at what point are valuation, therefore the market, tethered to reality? And what is that reality when there's limited visibility, but at the same time, you know, you can't fight the Fed. And so I find it very hard against my nature, because my nature is definitely want to start putting out feelers on the short side, which is suicide, obviously. But, you know, I got a friend, JC Peretz, you know, Howard, you know him well. He's just like, when stocks are going from bottom left to upper right, that generally is a sign that you should be buying. But at what point, you know, I think the last I checked, the forward multiple on Zoom was 800 or something nuts. Peloton, Peloton, I don't think is even cash flow positive. Netflix, free cash flow negative. And just a lot of these names are just like, okay, well, I guess, yeah, here we are again. But at the same time, you don't want to step in front of these things and putting out shorts yet. So
how do you short a market where there's no supply?
Where
the paper's all locked up. I mean, think about it. What do you need to be a short seller?
I mean, I'll chime in here and saying, like, we're getting in already really deep. We were, one minute we're talking about all the next generation. Now you're talking about short and shit and supply. But the thing is, the market's got something for everybody. You don't have to play everything.
Exactly.
And, you know, that part of the market's just like a giant game of dare. And we saw that play out with Kodak. And, yeah, you can play the game of dare, and you can be long ahead of, like, Peloton, obviously going to end up diluting. You know, they should use their stock price to do some crazy things right now. So guess what? They will. Or they will get, you know, no different than Lulu having to go buy Mirror at the last minute, because they fell so far behind on these things. So they're playing giant games of chess. You're kind of betting, you're betting on their game of chess as it goes on, right? And that's fascinating, you know, probably why that chess show is so popular right now, the Queen's Gambit, right?
Oh yeah.
It's like, only in the market can you kind of, hopefully, and this, we're all playing armchair quarterback going, what should Jack fucking, why are we letting Jack Dorsey run two companies? He can't even run one, or he's great at one. Why isn't he focused on one? And so the stock market is a giant armchair quarterback where we're all watching these guys play chess. Some of them don't even know that they're in the game of chess. They're just fucking, you know, the product's flying off the shelves because of the product team, but they haven't even started playing chess yet. And I think, you know, that's where we are. That's why these multiples are so high. So I try not to overthink this. It's just like the multiples are high for a reason, right? It's the Fed. We've moved beyond the spreadsheet in terms of growth. You can't contain these multiple. You can't contain these companies. You can't predict the growth rates. So there's no model that works. So they're trading at valuations that eventually will either become the norm, and we'll look back and go, fuck, discounted cash flow was a joke. Or we'll go back to some semblance of like, oh, interest rates rose and stocks go down. So we just don't know all that stuff. But I don't think kids need to learn how to short markets. I think the best thing that we tell kids is like, cash is not a bad thing. And having, you know, a year of savings is not a bad thing. And you know what I mean? All the little things saved. There's some great sayings that just aren't old enough, you know, that can be repeated. And that, you know, shorting stocks is kind of like a mug. There's no billionaire short sellers.
Exactly.
If they are, they're miserable fucks. But I'm not against it. We all like to think that we're smarter, and I'm guilty of it occasionally with small bets, but you know, it turns out to just drive you nuts. You know, great companies, ride great companies, ride great founders, you know, and you know, I call it like the Peloton, right? Like if you watch, it'd be like someone riding the other way in the Peloton or wearing like a hoodie and like a thick parka trying to keep up with the Peloton. That's what short selling is. Like if you got a bunch of people moving smart in one direction, just get behind them and draft. And don't be too big a pig, but follow the smart people and hug us, you know, stay in that formation of a Peloton and try and not create drag for everybody else, like try and throw, you know, add some value to that Peloton. And that's where kind of social networks are at in chat. It's like, let's get this group together and let's cut some drag. Let's cut some win and let's figure out this game.
Howard, I want to ask you, because I think I've heard you on your podcast say that you have one of those bikes, correct? The Peloton bikes?
I did. I've ordered it 7 times and canceled it 7 times. So I just canceled it again. They must fucking hate me at Peloton. But I don't think I'd use it. I keep ordering it. And then like they push the date back and I go, fuck that. I'll take the $3,000 back and I'll keep riding my bike outside. But I think at some point I'll get one, but I'm also over it at some level. I think there's like a great opportunity there and there was a great trade there. I think that great trade is a little long in the tooth, but I could be wrong. Great founder, great company. I think there's some risks more than, you know, it's a heavy duty hardware product still and it's expensive. So it's still a luxury.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to ask you guys about the news around the two companies that released news that they have a high probability vaccines for COVID. And then we both seen a day later that the CEOs sold a large percent of shares in the companies. Was this just prudent of them? Is this a little, ethical concerns? A little bit of both. I'm just kind of curious what you guys think about this.
I'll comment just because I want to move to Wall Street Bound and I'll say something before I have to hop, but I apologize. I think people can get caught up in this news and this stuff. I mean, like I don't trade biotechs. I mean, I think if you really look at the whole scope of thing, America had to solve this problem because the politicians weren't going to solve this. And people, America's a big place and everybody's just, we're lost, it seems, in the beast of being such a big country with so many opinions and, you know, a ticker. Everybody's got a ticker tape and everybody's got a voice. And so, you know, wrong problem, wrong time. America's really, you know, showing their weakness. But the one thing we knew in America is like, it's in their interest to solve this. It's in corporate America's interest to solve this fucking problem fast. And sure enough, look who does it. We didn't need government help. Pfizer's doing it. The startup's doing it. I forget the company. So I try and not worry about what the founders are doing. I assume the game's rigged. I think the number one lesson that a young kid should learn is like, dude, you are the mug. and as long as you realize you're the mark, you may just not be mad all the time at the machine. If you go to play pinball and you think the thing's gamed, you're not going to have as much fun, like, or it's Space Invaders or all the old games that I used to play. And I'm hearing the same thing with Peloton, like people who are competitive by Peloton and they find out other people are amping their machines and everything's got a different output. And that's turning people off their Pelotons because they're getting their ass kicked by their friends because they've juiced their Peloton in a different way. Right? Like you have to assume you're the sucker, whether it's in a Peloton competitive thing with your friend or especially in the stock market when money's on the line. So I don't even think about the news. I just assume good news was, you know, somebody's making a buck off that good news. Why did they announce it when they, like, why did they announce it? As much as I'm not a Trump fan, couldn't Pfizer announced it a week before the election? So even though I'm not a conspiracy theorist, you go bonkers trying to think, you know, all the things that could go right. Or you could just say people are idiots. It's just all a series of random events. And there's a bunch of crooks out there for sure. And that when you buy a stock, that's your money and buyer beware. And have a plan to get out because everybody's out to get you. That's kind of the way I look at the market. And I think if you learn that going in, I think you'll be a lot happier as an investor.
Very well. Yes, for sure. Okay, so let's hit on the on Wall Street Bound on the charity poker tournament. Then, Howard, when you jump off, we'll jump a little bit back more into trading, Troy. So, Troy, since the last time we've had you on, man, like you've made a lot of progress. I feel like with Wall Street Bound. Despite this, you know, rough year that's went on, just speak to the progress you've made and how you and Howard and Stockwitz connected.
Yeah, thanks for that, Ray. So actually, I sought Howard out. You know, Howard being who he is, and as he sort of laid out, you know, with his mission to democratize access, to level the playing field, just his messaging on his own blog was just clear to me that, you know, this is a guy who was in it, but what gets it. And so I think I just cold reached out to Howard and just said, hey man, this is what I'm working on. You know, what do you think? And over the course of some weeks, months, we just started going back and forth, and Howard's been a fan and a supporter ever since. And so Howard connect me with StockTwits, you know, and the basic principle again of StockTwits by extension of just where Howard's coming from is this idea of all of the sort of elitism, high convoluted, deep fundamental quantitative mathematics of the markets has nothing to do with these young people that now have access to information in a way that was never before possible. Commissions are free. Robinhood has just gamified it. You've got fractional share ownership. And somehow, intuitively, we all know that young people everywhere have the ability to figure this thing out. But yet, if you look at it through this microcosm of the Wall Street recruitment pipeline, what it takes to get on a trading desk, going to the 10 schools they recruit from, and even then 3.99 perfect SAT, and in the Glee Club, like, you know, that's what, 1% of the 1%? That has nothing to do with these young people that you know can break this thing apart, as Howard said, if you give them access to Robinhood or vape pipe, like they can figure it out. And so StockTwits is all about that idea of democratizing access information and trying to figure this thing out. And so it's just been a journey and it's been interesting, man. You know, I spend a lot of my time just knocking on doors, trying to build relationships. And as you can imagine, not despite George Floyd, but because of it, you know, we started having more traction in fundraising during that 3 month hot period of the summer than, you know, we have since the year and a half since we launched. I guess it makes sense. Our messaging, where we are, who we cater to, and based on principles that are just undeniable. There's no debate. Talent and IQ are equally distributed. Opportunity is not. Wall Street Bound is all about the idea of finding the talent, meeting them where they are, providing them with the skills and training they need to have access to the game, and just unleashing this wave onto the planet. And yeah, so I mean, we've been fortunate.
Yeah, I mean, it's genius in the sense that, like, where Troy, first of all, he hit me up, but they were cold emails. So, you know, they still work. But he had a compelling pitch from the beginning, and it just kept coming back to me because it just was so much common sense there. He was hitting, and he wasn't just cold pitching me a biotech play, he was pitching me something down Main Street. And I'm not captain of the charity team, not because I'm obviously for charity, I'm not a billionaire, but I'm all for charity, but we're all busy doing our own thing. And we'd like to, if we can do something that's down the middle of the plate for us, which is where Wall Street Bound is, it was great. And so, you know, when I met Troy the first time after a few cold emails, I was like, man, if you get to this point, I think this is a hit. And we had a brainstorm, and he struggled, as everybody does when they're asking for money, whether you're the best investor in the world raising money or whether you're a not-for-profit with the best idea in the world, it's brutal. And, you know, he just kept persisting and you know, and in the end, that's all, it's all there. Like, you have to persist. Like, nothing, these organizations don't evolve, whether it's a startup company or a not-for-profit, unless the idea is good. And even if the idea is good, you got to get the timing right. And then if you get the timing right, you still got to hit the right person. And then you still got to ask for the order. All the shit that you see in the movies, you know, and, you know, whether it was the Wall Street movie or the Facebook movie, you know. So Troy did all that and then stumbled upon this FinTwit community. And so now it's got some momentum, right? Like, the message makes sense. The teaming with StockTwits makes sense. You know, Rishi, our CEO at StockTwits, got it. Phil Perlman, who ran community and knows everybody in the community, got it. And so you finally stumble upon the right people if you keep pushing, and then just shit starts happening on the internet, and we're raising some money, and Troy will get you know, get the job done and get people on board. You know, the more people play the game, the better, as Troy says. There's room for everybody. The Fed's printing money for everybody. Everybody gets a car. It's like Oprah. Or it's like Ellen, the show. Everybody gets some dollars. So you might as well learn how to make something with the dollars. So I think that's a good mission.
Yeah.
And, you know, the poker tournament coming up this weekend, Troy will fill you in on, is just a fun way to, you know, raise awareness for the idea and for the good cause, which is we all win if we onboard more people. We don't need more suckers. We just need more people playing the game well and speaking the language. So I said, like, we were told to speak Chinese and Spanish. Guess what? English is the language, and English has never been more the language because tech is an English language, right? If you're in Japan, that's why their stock market took 30 years to kind of break out again. And they're still 50% from all-time highs because they speak another language that no one else is speaking. The only thing they got going for them is they got a stock market that speaks in one language, price, buy and sell. But, you know, so US, that is the language. So we're finally coming to terms with that fact. It's not a dirty thing. And people need to know to talk about money and where it fits into the world. And yeah, it may not buy happiness, but it sure buys a lot of, things. And sometimes you need those things to get to the next level. And so who are we to judge, you know, who gets to learn this language? So I think that's been the big mystery. Wall Street packaged that up, and Troy was part of that. And they packaged that game up behind a wall and told you how complicated it is. And now we've gone the other way and told people, oh, don't, you know, it doesn't need to be that complicated. Just put in these 500 stocks and be vanilla like everybody else. And we're seeing that could unravel. And so I think we're saving ourselves a lot of headache right now by teaching people how to do this. It's, you know, we went from trade everything to just give it to Vanguard, and now we're moving back towards maybe you should not just do, not, maybe it's not a good idea that everybody in America owns the same fucking 500 stocks. You know what I mean? Like, maybe there's some risk in that. And we might have saved ourselves a lot of money if we teach kids that maybe Vanguard isn't the only answer. We may be saving ourselves from the next crisis. So there you have it. Sorry to take up all that time. I'm going to hop, but Troy, bring it home. Thanks for creating Wall Street Bang Ray. JJ, thanks for having me on.
All right, Howard. Thanks for your time, man. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Yeah, you know, Troy, we were, you know, talking along these lines of, you know, bridging the gap between, you know, Wall Street and the urban community. You came into our room earlier today, and, you know, this is something JJ's always told to me, and I know you agree with it as well, is that some of the best traders that you guys have known weren't like Ivy League guys, you know, and I think it's great, like, giving people this chance. And just on this, like, why do you think maybe people from not like a, you know, Ivy League background or like real high academic honors turned out to be good traders?
Wow, that's a lot to unravel. You know, I would say, you know, we kind of all know, like, the running joke in the community is like, you know, doctors turn out to be the worst traders and investors because all of that academic achievement translates into an overconfidence, an overinflated sense of intelligence. Whereas we know at the end of the day, you know, IQ is only part of that story of what it takes to succeed in general, much less in the markets. If anything, I think it can be well argued from a data standpoint that the best traders turn out to be not the ones with the highest IQ, because then that, you know, then you start having other conversations about ego. You know, where does confidence begin or end versus being disciplined? And this idea, well, I'm right. Next thing you know, you're averaging down, and you know your mind or the, you know you should not be, but I'm right. And so, you know, there's a lot to unravel there, but I guess at the end of the day, we know that the qualities that it takes to succeed in life and in the markets are not necessarily limited to IQ, intelligence, et cetera. And I think that's where that conversation begins.
Right.
If I can just hop in for just a second.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm listening to what you're saying, and I've been in this business since 1993, and I know thousands of traders, and I would have to say street smarts is the number one thing The number two thing is how bad you want it and how far you're willing to go to get it. Because if you're not willing to rip the other guy's heart out and eat it in front of him on that floor, on that desk, in that deal, you are dog meat. So that's what trading's about. It's about being street smart. It's about being, you have to be the dog that's willing to die in the fight. And I'm not talking about retail trading. I'm talking about when, you know, when we're trading size, right? Retail trading, and I've found, you know, running the room and speaking to a lot of people, it's the people who want it and the people who are willing to put in the discipline to actually learn what's going on. And that's what I find with retail people. With institutional guys, it's definitely street smarts. I mean, one of the most smartest traders I've ever known used to dig pools for a living before he was a trader, you know, and he was just absolutely amazing, but he was very street smart, you know.
You know, JJ, man, thanks for that, because that is exactly the heart of the why Wall Street Bound came to mind and why I know it will succeed, because what traditional Wall Street may view as negative attributes of what young, hungry talent, let's say from the community, from the streets, possesses, we completely turn that on its head.
Yeah.
You know, it's that hunger. Exactly. And mind you, it's a certain level of hunger, because we as people of color, you know, everyone, ambition obviously is irrespective of zip code, but imagine growing up in neighborhoods and having experiences where you're on the outside of the outside looking in, and you know what you want. You see it on TV. You see it. You take the train downtown. You know what it can be like. And so imagine where you can turn that into not only something positive, but unleash it with simply providing the education and the training, much less, for example, Wall Street Bound. We have been fortunate to, you know, I'm very intentional about this process. So I heard at some point that Ray Dalio at Bridgewater, that as part of their interview process, or I think it's maybe the onboarding process, all interviewees or all employees do take a behavioral assessment done by this firm called Predictive Index. And so I knew right away, okay, I'm going to go all over that. And so for our most recent, the Diverse Trader Training Program, our prop trading program, where we're just recruiting literally off the street. Now, nominally, you know, a lot of the applicants tend to be inner city college students, but more so than that traditional Wall Street, what they care about. I'm all about how does your brain work? How do you think? Yeah. How do you problem solve? Because that's what I know is the universal. That's what I know these kids have, regardless of where they are. And so all applicants, you know, the Dr. Van K. Tharp, you know, the godfather of trading psychology, they all take his trader type exam. They all take Myers-Briggs. They all get a predictive index behavioral assessment. That's what I want to look at. And I think that's the thing that makes this an interesting story versus all of the traditional metrics that Wall Street looks at. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, and JJ, you bring up a great point. You know, I don't want to sort of like just preach, but it's interesting to me that, for example, firms owned by women and minorities manage only 1.3% of assets of the $69 trillion managed by the industry, by asset managers. Even though we all know, not even we all know, the data shows that performance is not statistically different from the industry as a whole. And when you break that down, let's say specifically for hedge funds controlled or managed by minority or female leaders had a return of, I think it's just about 6.6% over the last 3 years compared to 3.9% for their peers. And I don't mean to blow you guys out, but I'll just say, obviously their peers meaning white males. And so this idea of, you know, traditional Wall Street, somehow there's a disconnect between the social capital aspect. You know, Charlie Scharf infamously, 2 months ago said, we can't find them. And so 85% we know of jobs are filled within a social network. And so there's all these things that within the traditional sort of pipeline. And, you know, I'm not about really whining about it, because that is what it is. I focus on what I can do, where I can affect change. And, you know, to Howard's point and all of us being here, your community, all of us traders, it's a wonderful place where we're in a rare industry where the more participants you have, the better vis-a-vis liquidity.
Exactly. So, you know,
sorry, you guys. No, I was going to say one last thing is that so the talent is virtually unlimited.
Yeah.
Capital is virtually unlimited. The playing field is virtually unlimited vis-a-vis, again, liquidity. Let's bring those two together and not
exactly.
just be blocked by this traditional wall of the social capital, as important as it is. Yeah. We can go beyond simply the idea of creating jobs or sending them for jobs on Wall Street, but let's broaden the network, broaden the game. Sorry, JJ.
No problem. No, I you probably didn't know, but I'm Sri Lankan, so I'm a brown guy. So I know exactly what, so that so you guys know that. The other thing is, when you were looking at finding these people, do you do any sort of testing, or is there any sort of way to see how they handle stress?
Stress. So not directly. Now, so I'm beginning to work with, or actually be, I wouldn't say advised by, but one of the world's most famous trained psychologists, Dr. Brett Steenbarger.
Yeah, we had him on the show.
Oh, that's right. Right. Of course. So Dr. Brett, we speak often. He actually just, I have a weekly check-in with my traders in the prop program. So he just spoke last Friday. And so, you know, he'll tell you and be able to explain more of how that comes out in some of these assessments and how it can be picked up or not. But at the end of the day, quite frankly, JJ, as you well know, brother, the only real way to see how stress is managed, because it even, you know, simulated trading does not
live
do it.
Fire. So it's you really put
only
them,
once you have that you live capital at risk, and how they handle it. And so, you know, the idea of like, you can't sleep. Okay. That's everything in your body telling you, you probably need to reduce your position size, or if you like the idea of trading large share size for your ego, you need to look for lower volatility assets or names. But yeah, man, there's no pre-test directly, but clearly the test of our program through this 1 year program where everyone is given. So no other program out there says we'll train you virtually. And upon, let's call it graduation, the stock options training is 250 hours. The foreign exchange training is 100 hours. And upon graduation, let's call it, you have $25,000 of live capital. You're expected to be managing $250,000 after a year. Nothing like this exists, but I don't know why. It's the most natural thing to me because I guess of the story. But that's all to say that once you start them off small and see how they react, there's some responsibility there in terms of how fast you push them along to that point of increasing position sizes, increasing the number of shares they can trade, increasing the number of positions at any given time. So I think the real long-winded way of just saying, listen, man, we just have to see them under in that environment before we really know. And that'll dictate how far along they get pushed or how fast.
Well, yeah, it's like they said in the movies, right? You got to put them in the shit, you know, see how they react, right? Because you're in live fire, it's completely different. I've had to actually walk over in a trading room and kick a chair because guys would freeze. I've had those situations. So it's just curious to see, business is much more calmer nowadays, and you don't have that sort of craziness that we did back in the day. But it's always interesting to see how you train guys and things like that. I'm very, very curious, and would love to help out in any way. I really, really like how you've put this together. It's quite a wonderful thing.
Appreciate it, man. I'm just trying to do the best I can with what I think works. And so, I reached out to Dr. Van K. Tharp, of course. The psychology aspect, I think, is vastly underrated. Everyone wants to focus and talk about, oscillators, indicators, deep fundamental, quantum mental. But, that all goes to shit when you do all your homework, you put on a trade, you get shaken out. Like, what was the point of all that? It gets deep, man. I remember reading, it might've even been a Dr. Alexander Elder book. I remember stories of like a guy has a habit or pattern of the first 2 to 3 weeks of the month, he's profitable. He ends up giving it away. And of course, initially he thinks, oh, it's the market. The news came out, earnings, not realizing it's a pattern. And one day he's like, okay, something is off. Finally, he finds it within himself to speak to a trading coach or a shrink. Turns out he has some deep-seated issues with being more successful than his dad. I mean, like, that's the stuff that really is a driver of all this. And there's only one way to get there, and that's to look at this holistically. So we have to look at all aspects, not just the technical training. And again, man, I'm just trying to give these kids the best shot, the best training I know how, and to unleash this talent on the world, because I know it's out there. I mean, I grew up in the Bronx, and you know, you sometimes, or a lot of times, it might not be directed into the most positive things and good for society. But even then, it's like, it's the same marketing skills, the same entrepreneurial skills. It's the same stuff.
Absolutely. And absolutely. And to speak to the psychology aspect, Troy, I was very fortunate to work with a trading coach myself recently, who we had on our podcast. Shout out to Kim. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I talked to her, Troy, was nothing a trading of nature, you know, like, and it's like, how could my trading improve? And I didn't even talk to her about trading, you know, and I totally agree 100% with what you're saying. And I, you know, I read I believe it was the article that you had with MarketWatch. You know her, yeah?
Yeah, just spoke for the first time yesterday, man. It's crazy.
Oh, no way. Oh, man, shout out to Kim. No, honestly, she's amazing. She helped me just even beyond trading. You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing, too, I believe. And I think you would agree, Troy, because I want to read a quote that I read in the article they had. And you said, the first step along the journey of trading is not mastery of concept or mastery of analysis. It's
mastery of self,
right? So, you know, just speaking from your own experience, Troy, as a trader, how'd you go about mastering yourself?
That's called an ex-wife. Quite frankly, up to some point, I looked in the mirror and thought I saw, like, you know, I'm 5'7 on a good day, but I saw, like, you know, an 8-foot Adonis. And she was like, no, if you don't go talk to somebody, I'm going to leave your black ass. And that began my journey. I'd love to say it was my 15 years of living in Asia, which is part of it now. So I do now meditate. I'm absolutely on board with this idea of, you know, this idea of finding that space where, I don't want to sound kooky, but the idea that there is connectivity between us as people on earth and the universe and all this kind of, you know, just, I guess what is commonly known as mindfulness, this idea of slowing it down inside and realizing, first off, the important thing, I don't know if Kim speaks about this, Ray, but the first thing is to realize or to become what's called the watcher, where you can see yourself and have that pause where there's some stimuli. You know, a guy steps on my foot on the train before I just say, what the fuck, and punch. It's like there is a moment to sort of take stock that I have a choice in how I react, why I'm reacting a certain way. And that begins that process of slowing down that space there between reactions. And you can actually begin to see and hear yourself. And once that space begins to get longer, then it gets quiet. And so it's been a journey. I'm an old man now, 49, 15 years in Asia. But it started off with my Japanese wife saying, you need a leather sofa.
But yeah, no, Troy, exactly. I mean, that's a lot of, you know, what I talked to Kim about is, yeah. And I meditate as well, Troy. And I mean, it's tremendous. I think a lot of things just come down to presence. Wow. Seeing yourself, you know, like you said, like, not, it's okay to feel certain, like, a guy steps on my foot, I could be pissed off, right? But it's, am I going to act on it? Or, you know, it's okay to feel a certain way. And I think that was a big thing that I took away from it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing, Ray, is like, most people, I don't think, recognize that when you react to situations, your brain tells you you're reacting to the stimuli in front of you, but you don't really realize that you're really reacting to that boy or girl from ages 0 to 7
right.
that learns certain mechanism, defensive or not, how to handle situations. And we don't necessarily outgrow these things without a supreme level of self-awareness. And, you know, we react to things based on just, you know, what we learn from ages 0 to 7. You know, the ancient Greeks used to say, show me the boy, you know, we'll add girl now, I'll show you the man. I mean, this is 2000 year old wisdom.
Yeah.
That's just what it is. And so how do you break that stuff down? And, you know, the word you use, man, presence is massive. You know, it's just, how do you slow it down to recognize that we actually are the masters of ourselves? Yeah, but he stepped on my toe. No, how you react is on you. And particularly for us as traders, like if you don't learn that lesson from not even day one, second one, that you are responsible for your own behaviors. I mean, the rest is just forget about the analysis, forget about market fundamentals and mechanics. It's you have to be responsible for your own behavior. And once you get that, the rest is, then it becomes the other 20% of, like, you know, market mechanics.
Yeah, right. It never ceases to amaze me that this concept, and I first learned it, Troy, with a poker player who was far more experienced than myself. And he was telling me, he's like, Ray, like, poker is a means for self-discovery. And there's so many similarities between poker and trading from the mental aspect of things. It's exactly the same almost, right? Because you're gonna have to learn how to deal with failure, which I think is a big point to what we were talking about with people with high academic honors. They're so used to, like, getting everything right, being the best. And, like, trading, we have to learn with failing, right? I mean, the same thing with life. Things are never gonna go 100% perfect, and learning how to respond to those type of events, you know, I just see so many different correlations, and I think it's a beautiful thing.
For sure, man. I mean, even the best traders in the world probably have what, 60-40 win loss ratios at best?
At best, right.
You know, Paul Tudor Jones, I forget what it was in Market Wizards, but I absolutely remember, I mean, some of the best guys in there were 50s, you know, maybe not even 60%. And losing is a part of the game, but as long as you have a game plan mapped out, it's you always win. You know, you win if it goes in your direction, you cash out. If you have a plan, you get stopped out, you win. And so as long as it's within, you know, but to bring it back, man, this is the conversation I love to have, as opposed to, you know, the conversations I have with a Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley. You know, I'm not recruiting and looking for black and brown kids from UPenn, Harvard. That's not where I want to play. It's these kids wherever they are, that for whatever reason, based on where they grew up, how they grew up, you know, projects, you know, dad's not home. But for whatever reason, the universe has created a behavior system, a way of problem solving that absolutely can make them successful in this space. Those are ones I want to find. And we know they're out there by the millions. That's what Wall Street Inbound is about. And so to this, you know, it's a conversation that we can have with all traders everywhere that understand. And so the idea that entry to the game is limited to, you know, 10 schools, 399, perfect SAT scores and squash club is ludicrous to me.
Yeah, it is, man. And it's, you know, Troy, I appreciate the energy, man, and like what you're bringing. And just to see from like a year ago, man, and now we got this charity poker tournament with StockTwits. I mean, that's a big deal. That they're a big, you know, big name in the retail trading community, or just the trading community in general, you know. So that's awesome. That tournament is this weekend, 21st. Saturday at 2 p.m., correct, Troy?
Saturday at 2 p.m. Yeah, thanks much. Lots of good things have happened. You know, we're official partners with Investopedia as well. We're having conversations with NYSE, FINRA, NASDAQ Foundation. I'll be hosting courses from the Chicago Merck, the CME Group.
Nice.
Yeah, just great quality conversations, but around this idea of leveling the playing field, making the education and the training available, but last but not least, uniquely with my most recent program that we announced in June on CNBC, is taking it beyond the financial literacy, the education, but actually providing these young people with access to capital and just unleashing that on the planet. And I'm just excited for what the future holds. And I'm excited to, you know, to have a platform like this where I can continuously spread the message, because I can't do it alone. It's important for me to constantly be looking and finding allies and just spread the message, because we're still a startup. But I'm grateful to both you guys for having me back. And, you know, again, to your community, it's all about whatever color you are, wherever you may be, whatever zip code, your zip code should not determine your ability to have the future you want based on this small window of traditional Wall Street recruiting metrics. And Wall Street Bound is about kicking open that damn door for all of us. Because I grew up 12 miles from New York Stock Exchange, the greatest economic engine on earth, and yet the poorest congressional district in America. You know, how can that be? It's an hour away. And so it is dear and near to me. This is what I'm on earth to do. And just thank you for the platform.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so again, for the listeners, the poker tournament is this Saturday, November 21st. Start at 2 p.m. I'm hosting a portion of it. Troy, thanks for, you know, getting me into this. I'm real happy to be, you know, amongst Jack
Swagger. How can I not, man? I mean, Ray, as a former pro, I would be crazy not to. And Ray, are we going to put into the chat, or should I just, is it okay to shout out chipsforcharity1word.stocktwits.com?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll definitely, I'll throw it in with the link for the podcast. We'll throw that in there. We'll put all the information for this tournament for all the listeners.
Perfect. And if anyone wants to get to me and check out more about the org or find me, wallstreetbound1word.org. Wall Street Bound, like heading towards one word, wallstreetbound.org. Thank you so much.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. And also for the listeners, I got JJ to come play the tournament now. So you guys know this guy's, you know, this is easy money. Stock Twits told me I could put a bounty on his head. So anyone who knocks him out, I'm sending $100 to. So that's that. He doesn't even know the hand rankings, so you know that should
be- I have no idea. I'm just gonna bring Oreos, that's all I know. That's all. My whole poker reference is Teddy KGB, that's it.
Yeah So that should be fun. I know, you know, Troy, I know a few members so far from our room are coming over to come play. I know Kim, I tried to get her to play, but she donated. At least she doesn't know how to play poker, but she donated.
Nice
I don't either.
Let everyone know. I mean, we'll have like, you know, downtown Josh Brown.
Yep.
One of them playing, Jack Swagger, Denise Schull, like some big names, Fed Speak, like some big names in the space, just out here just for a good cause, having fun. I think you and I will be hosting, you know, maybe even have a beer or two on air if we're allowed. Is that okay?
This is your thing, right? I mean, yeah.
Okay. No, it'll be my coffee mug. Sorry.
Okay. All right. I'll make sure I come prepared as well. It's going to be a lot of fun, Troy. I love poker. I love this cause. A lot of big names. This will be a lot of fun. Anything we missed, Troy? Anything else you want the listeners to know?
No, I think we covered it all, man. Just happy trading. Think about getting
you there, Ray?
Yeah, I'm still there. I don't know. Did we lose Troy?
I think we did.
Oh, hey, Troy, you still there? I don't know if I can't hear you.
No, we hit it all, man. Just Wall Street Bound, regardless of what zip code you're from, we're all about kicking that door open and making this game available to all.
My man. Excellent. All right, so that's going to conclude today's episode of Confessions of a Market Maker. If you guys enjoyed the show, please rate and review it for us. If you want to learn market auction theory, market profile, trade futures, trade equities, join JJ and I at microefutures.com. So for Troy Prince, for Howard Lindzen, I'm the Superman lover. He's the heartthrob of Saskatchewan. Make sure you use him stops, though.
Good night, everyone.
All right. See you, Troy.
Take care.
Well,